This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
Don't need permission, made my decision to test my limits. 'Cause it's my business, God is my witness, stop what I finished. Don't need no holder, taking control of this kind of moment. I'm locked and loaded, completely focused, my mind is open. All that you got's gonna skin on my neck, don't you stop, boy. Something about like introducing us to a new thing. I wanna save it for later, the taste of flavor. 'Cause I'm a taker, 'cause I'm a giver. It's only nature, I live for danger. All that you got, skin to skin, oh my God, don't you stop, oh. Something about
back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I am joined by a long-term friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine. It is the wonderful Becky Krull. How are you doing, Becky?
I'm so good. The sun is shining. I'm having a great day.
And you're like really flowery dressed. You've like come for the summer.
I'm here for the summer. Honestly, all my winter clothes are just my summer clothes with like really thick tights on. So, you know, I'm really here for this weather.
My summer clothes are my winter clothes plus scissors.
Okay.
I just take my scissors to my winter clothes and just fashion them up a little bit.
Good,
I'm wearing a crop top today.
You look so cute. I love it.
Thank you. This isn't something that I usually do, but it's something I want to do a little bit more.
Yeah,
I've very recently started shopping in the women's sections of clothes shops. And when I first ever did this, I was really nervous about it. And I remember me and my friend going to buy an item of women's clothing, and the cashier being like, you do realize that this is a woman's jacket,
rude,
don't you?
Really?
So I was a little bit nervous about it, but I'm getting a little bit more confident, and I'm trying to live my best life.
The concept of like gendered clothing is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Just wear whatever you want.
And I have a theory that if we went into like a clothes store on the high street and took away all the gender labeling, just put all the clothes in one room, I think you'd get a lot more men wearing clothes that are made for women and a lot more women wearing clothes that are made for men.
Yeah, totally. A lot of my male friends who wear skinny jeans said for years and years they had to buy the girls skinny jeans, and they got made fun of for wearing skinny jeans because it was the only way that you could buy them.
Yeah.
But now, like, they're just like a staple boys' clothes item, so... You know what? Times change, fashion changes.
It does change. Yeah. So many of my friends, I've not done this yet, but so many of my friends say as well that like women's jeans fit so much better on men.
They probably do because there's so many more different varieties.
Yeah.
So, I think that fashion altogether is becoming better and more well-fitting.
I think so too. Yeah. Well, Becky, tell us a little bit about you. For any of our listeners who don't know who you are, tell us what you do. Where you came from, what your background is. Tell us all the things about you. I know, obviously. But.
Okay. For the others. This is my 11th year on YouTube.
I did not know that.
Okay.
That's insane.
Yeah. So I turned 23 yesterday. So it's kind of like over half, or is it half?
Of your life?
Of my life.
That's insane.
Online.
Wait, so how old were you when you started? Maths, Callum.
Oh,
very
12.
Simple maths. 12.
Yeah, 12.
Wow.
Yeah, so really like... too young to be on the platform, quite frankly.
That's debatable.
Yeah, well, you know, the internet's like everything now, but back then it really wasn't. Like, you know, I would say something about like memes to my friends at school, like when I was that young, and they wouldn't know anything about it. And now that's all the young people care about.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so crazy. So like, how did you even get into YouTube at that age?
Well,
because YouTube was just starting. This would have been 2006.
I started in 2007. It began in 2006. Before
that's
I was
crazy.
On YouTube, there was a website called Bolt.com, which has since changed, deleted. I don't know. It's disappeared. But it was kind of like a primitive version of YouTube / MySpace, mm-hmm. Where it was like a blog site, but there was also videos and like video searching. And there was some original content creators on there as well. And I was like so into it. I just thought it was so fun. There was like some like, you would call them YouTubers now, but I guess they were like bolters back then.
Yeah.
Who just like, you know, made really cool, like fun, jokey videos, like classic old school YouTube. I thought it was so cool.
Just because they wanted to, and it was a creative outlet, and
yeah.
not for any, because there was no real monetary gain or anything like that back then.
Yeah. When did you start YouTube?
Oh, I'm like 4 years,
okay.
Which compared to you, I'm like brand new to the platform.
No, but that's still like pretty old school compared to, you know, people who started like last year and everything.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, but there are people out there who tell me about like old YouTube, and they show me like pictures of what YouTube used to look like.
Yeah.
And it's like, It kind of looks like MySpace, but weird.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there for any of that. And I feel like I missed out.
I mean, in a way, you know what I miss? They had the old school partner program banner at the top.
Okay.
And the sidebar artwork. And you could change your banner and your sidebar. And every day I think about it and I miss it more and more.
So you could like customize your page
Proper
and make it look all pretty.
Yeah.
Why would they take that away from us?
I don't know. No websites have got proper customization left. The only one that does is Tumblr.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, I love Tumblr.
Yeah, me too.
I just use it for Naked Man. That's probably not what you use it for.
I've got like a secret identity as like having like a really high level meme blog where like I basically for ages, because back in the day, like my social media got like a lot more engagement, but Tumblr was like my secret social media. And I made it so like I didn't promote it on anything else and I only grew it organically. And so I got to about 9K and like all I do is just post like memes like every single day before I go to bed. I like relax and I just like post loads of
memes. I need to follow this.
Get involved.
But it's a secret one, so you can't tell.
It's not secret anymore.
Oh, you've let the cat out of the bag.
I've let the cat out of the bag. bcky.tumblr.com.
Okay, I'm on it.
Yeah.
I'm getting on that tonight.
Get your meme life.
Get my meme life.
Absolutely.
You know, I know somebody who has quite a large following online. I'm obviously not going to say who it is.
Okay.
And they're, you know, they're a really popular creator, and they actually have a secret Tumblr
Ooh.
that has like 2-3 million followers on it, but nobody knows it's them.
Oh my god!
But they kind of use it to share like naughty things.
Oh,
but nobody knows it's them.
That's so
nobody
dangerous,
knows.
Though.
Not naughty things of themselves.
Oh.
Just like it's like a Tumblr,
curating
and pulling little bits and pieces that you found across Tumblr.
That's so funny. But that's the thing, like Tumblr, like you can really be so anonymous on it.
Yeah.
I honestly, I'm going to be so sad the day that it dies.
What do you mean, what the day that it dies?
I hope that it doesn't, but I've got a feeling.
You're scaring me.
It's not as popular as it used to be.
I love it, though.
Yeah, me too. I'm like a big Tumblr advocate. It's so much fun.
For me, it's like me time.
Yeah.
You know, when I need to like have a quiet moment. And I'm not even talking about, you know, that. I just mean when I want a quiet moment alone, like get into my Tumblr zone. Reblog some pictures.
Yeah.
That's my
really
thing.
It really is so different to all the other social
yes.
networks as well. Like, you can get in that zone. And also, the audience who are on there, for the most part, I think that they're...
Intelligent. Very intelligent.
Really smart.
They're very woke.
Yeah, really woke. That's how I became woke, was through Tumblr, you know?
Tumblr.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel like there's a surprising amount of kind of political discourse that happens on Tumblr. Like, I feel like I've learned so much about... I mean, even LGBT plus issues.
Yeah.
If there's ever, like, an issue I don't understand, just have, like, a deep dive into Tumblr, and there's so many people talking about it in a really kind of articulate and intelligent way.
Yeah.
And it's actually... Yeah, I am. It's a bit of a stretch, but I'm going to say it's almost like an educational resource. Like, the amount I've learned from that website is insane. And obviously, you need to check everything because anyone can say anything, and you need to check that it's actually true. But I do genuinely think it's an amazing tool for educating yourself. Like, but it's kind of, Twitter's similar, but Twitter, you have to be so succinct with your messaging that it's hard to really have a full-length discussion.
You know what? I'm sure we're probably going to touch on this later, but the first time that I came out, and I kind of came out and went back into the closet, I came out again a few times, was on Tumblr. Because I felt more comfortable with the audience on there.
Yeah.
That I felt like I could be myself there and talk about it and discuss it. Because it's something which was obviously weighing on my mind, especially like a lot. I think I was about 14 or 15.
So quite young.
Yeah.
So let's not talk about that later. Let's talk about it now. Right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I want to know about like your YouTube journey and then how that fits into it and how coming out on Tumblr. And then when was it until you came out publicly?
Like last year.
Was it really that?
Yeah, really recent.
Wow.
I know.
So that's a long, long time.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, because I had already came out and like I sometimes like discussed my sexuality like a little bit, like hinting at it on Tumblr still in that area, some of my very dedicated fans who like knew me on Tumblr knew this about me already. So when I came out last year on YouTube, a lot of people were still kind of like, oh, we already knew this.
We already knew this.
A majority of people probably didn't. So, yeah.
I think we can very much get in the mindset as kind of like people who share our lives online. It can be very easy to think that if I share a piece of information somewhere online, that my entire audience base and every single person in the world is going to know that thing about me. There'll often be times where I'll say something in passing on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then I almost kind of assume that like 9 months later, some completely random person is going to know that thing about me. And it's not the case, you know.
You know what? I think you're not the only person who makes content online who has this mindset, because I've certainly have been susceptible to it as well until I realize I'm talking to like someone and like they don't know all these things about me. But because you've done the act of sharing it, you've shouted it into like the world, you expect that, you know,
every single person in the world is going to know that
thing. Yeah, even every person who follows you is going to know it. And like they don't. Like, so many things are missed. I know how much stuff I miss.
Yeah, like, you know? There are people out there who I absolutely adore. I love their content. I'm, like, borderline obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the amount of stuff I don't know about them that they've shared online, because you don't see every single piece of content. You can't possibly consume every single thing about that person.
You'd have to live your life and their life to know everything.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
For, like, how many people do we follow? Like, hundreds.
Hundreds?
Yeah.
Thousands? No, hundreds. Hundreds.
I feel like I'm in the thousands. I don't know. I follow
a
lot.
I can't stay on top of all. It's too much.
No, it is too much.
I keep having to, like, shrink down, and then I feel really bad for, like, unfollowing people.
Yes.
Sorry for unfollowing you, Becky. No, I didn't. I didn't. Look, check. I promise. I don't need to check.
I know. I know.
Shall we have a bit of music?
Yes.
All right.
A bop.
This is one of your choices. I'm going to butcher this. Odzeki?
Odzeki, yeah.
Odzeki?
Yeah, I think so. I might be butchering it as well.
And this is Already Dead.
Yes. Oh, what a tune.
What a tune, apparently. Can't wait to hear it.
Get involved.
We're all born in the womb of death.
So, Becky, I want to talk about sharing so much of our lives online. You know, so many, I do it, you do it, so many of our friends do it. And I kind of want to talk about, like, where the line is. Like, where do you draw the line and say, no, I'm going to keep this thing personal? Or do you think that if you put your life online, then you should kind of share every single detail of your life? I know that there are a lot of hardcore fan bases out there who kind of expect to know every single detail, and they almost feel entitled to know things about you if you don't want to share them. And if you don't share them, there can often be that kind of thought of, well, this isn't fair. You've shared everything with us and now you're keeping this from us. Like, let's talk about your videos and you and how, what your thoughts are on that.
I think it's super difficult, especially if you've been online for a long time, because like the culture has changed so much. I think one of the things I see is a lot of people keep things to themselves for one reason or another, whether it's like relationships or sexuality or even like plastic surgery. I see a lot of like vitriol about that. And people keep it private for a lot of reasons. But the number one reason which audiences, especially like, you know, the kind of like hatery kinds of people think, is because they're trying to be deceitful and they're trying to, you know, hide things from us. So they make it their mission to uncover it and reveal it and like find it out for themselves. And it's so toxic. But like the reasons are usually because a person's shy or because they, you know, they just aren't able to talk about it at that moment or anything. And I think the thing that's missing is maybe clarity and reassurance from the creator to that audience about things instead of keeping it a complete secret and like not saying anything. But I don't know, it's something which always like plays on my mind, and it's hard to weigh up because you know things stay online forever.
They do, and that is a scary, scary thought sometimes, that you literally every tweet, every nonsense tweet I send that just pops into my head, that's there forever. And yes, you can delete it after 30 seconds, but somebody will have screenshotted
it. Right, someone will have saved it, someone will have screenshotted it. Like, you have to know from the moment that you step online when you're, what, nowadays, 8, 9, 10 years old, everything that you post is public and in the public domain forever. You know, it's terrifying.
It's really, really, really scary.
Yeah.
How do you feel about things like, one thing that I think creators and online personalities, celebrities, etc., try to keep secret is often like romantic relationships. And I know, again, that there can be almost, I've had friends who have gotten into relationships and they've been very public about the fact that they're in a relationship. Look, I've met somebody really special and I'm in a relationship now. And then their audience will try and figure out who it is and they'll be looking for clues. And it's almost... Do I want to see? Yeah, I feel like it's almost disrespectful to that person if they've said, "Look, I'm in a relationship. I don't want to share who that is because I want to keep that personal. I want to keep that private." And then sometimes there can be this almost like a sudden like a crack team of spies breaks out and they're like, "Right, let's figure out who it is and let's look at every little tiny detail of everything to try and figure out who the person is."
Yeah, completely. I mean, just in the news this week, Liza and David's breakup.
Oh, yeah, the breakup, yeah.
Every single day I read BBC News, like, the most read features. And then I went on it the other day. I was like, oh, my God, YouTube's leaked into the real world again. David and Liza's breakup is on, like, the top read of BBC News. But, yeah, they, like, that's such a large-scale breakup. And they've been so mature about it and so, you know, good to each other.
Because they made a video together, right?
Yeah, I've not actually watched it yet.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah.
But I think they did it together and they said, look, we've broken up. And I think we have friends as well who have gone for a breakup recently. Alex Bertie and Jake Edwards.
Yeah, oh, that video. It was very, like, you know, thoughtful. But then I saw Alex was tweeting about how he's, like, lost a few followers from it as well. And it's so sad that that can be, like, the fallout. And that's one of the shames that there are about having a relationship online and then also, you know, creating content about your relationship almost.
Yeah.
That can feed into, like, the entitlement from the audience a little bit as well. And people, you know, thinking that they know better about your relationship based off what you've just shared online rather than your actual, like, nuanced real-life relationship when, like, the 90% of the relationship that's not videoed, not tweeted about, not shared.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like it's, like, more like 99.99%.
Yeah.
Like, you only share a tiny little, you know, if it's an Instagram post, you're literally sharing a second of your day.
Completely.
You know, if it's a video, if it's a vlog, even if that vlog's half an hour long, that's still half an hour in a 24-hour day. It's such a tiny, tiny portion of that. And people, I think they kind of get this idea that they completely know a person, they completely know a relationship. I think going back to Alex and Jake particularly, I think because they were an LGBT plus relationship, I think a lot of people almost like latched onto them and they saw them as this amazing couple because we don't see much LGBT plus representation. So you can see like a lot of particularly young viewers seeing that and latching onto it.
Yeah.
And then for something, when something like that breaks apart, there is almost this audience entitlement. It's not right, but you can almost understand where it comes from. They, you know, you look to an LGBT plus relationship as almost like a beacon of hope.
Yeah.
And when that falls apart, then it can leave people kind of scrambling around for something to grab onto.
Yeah, especially when it brings you so much joy to see that kind of representation and see, you know, this is something which I can have myself as well one day in the future. And, you know, life is tough when people break up, whether it's your friends, let alone like your favorite YouTubers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you vlog.
Yes, I do.
You've recently started something new on your channel, I believe.
I mean, basically, I've just started, well, you know what? I think all of this has started from like the adpocalypse a little bit.
Oh, God, not the adpocalypse.
Yeah, and like YouTube just kind of having a really strange algorithm. And when that happened and my channel, like the numbers started like going a little bit strange, I was like, you know what? I don't care. I'm just going to make whatever I want. Because you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You
exactly.
can try your hardest, you know, tick every box. Great thumbnail, great title, great tags, great description, great content.
And it can still fail.
Exactly. So now I'm like, you know what, whatever. I'm just going to have fun. And I've been having fun vlogging lately. And one of my biggest aspirations has always been to show more of my personality on my channel, because I feel like I've always done a lot of like showcasing things, like whether it's like the dancing videos ages ago or like the fashion videos, just talking about something rather than like, you know, injecting my personality into it. And even before, I remember when I was editing like fashion haul vlogs, I would edit out the fun bits where I was like just chatting. I was like, no, I need to get to like the content, it's getting too long.
Oh no, that's such a shame,
because
that's where you shine and that's where you come across. But I can absolutely understand why you did that at the time and why you felt at the time that that was the right thing to do. Especially with, I feel like with YouTube, it's like, here is your cookie cutter, and this is what you have to do, and you can often try and fit yourself into that. And like you said, no matter what you do, it can still fail. So being yourself, I think, is the most important thing. That's why you started doing it in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. Literally just sharing myself, you know, what I'm passionate about, what I'm interested in. And that's what I've like gone back to doing now. So I'm just like having fun doing really, really like vlogs full of a lot of memes, like a lot of my personality. Literally, like one of my friends said, your vlogs are like your Twitter personality, like come into your YouTube videos, and I'm loving it. And I'm like, you know what, that's great. And everyone's saying, like, I can see that you're having fun, and that's, you know, it's making me enjoy the vlog more. So
it's so lovely to hear that feedback as well, and
right?
to see that people notice, for a start, to see that people notice the change in you, but also to see that they're being so supportive that perhaps you're taking a slight change in direction and perhaps you're showing your personality a bit more. That's a really, really positive and wonderful thing.
It's scary when you put your personality out there, because like that's you. And it, you know, people can kind of, you know, poke pins in things that you like, but if they're poking pins in you, that's 10 times more painful.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit scared when I look at the comments. I always like shield my eyes a bit, but literally every single one has been so nice and so kind and so supportive. So I'm very lucky with the audience that has stayed with me and is supporting me like even until now.
No, it's so lovely. And again, you're absolutely right about, I think we are kind of in this unique position of being online content creators where our brand is us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're director of a company and your company fails, obviously that's not a good thing, and you're not going to be happy about that, and that's going to be hard to take, but it's not you.
Yeah.
And when your brand and yourself are so closely connected, any small failure, any criticism is not just a criticism of your brand, but it's a criticism of who you are as a person.
Completely.
And I know a lot of people out there say, well, you put yourself online, then that's what you deserve.
You
should expect this. But I think, you know, people need to be a little bit more forgiving sometimes. And I think people need to, you know, say, look, this is a person's life. And if I don't like something about it, then maybe I should reserve my comments. But you know what online trolls are like.
Oh, if only.
They absolutely don't like to reserve their comments. I really, really want to talk a little bit more about your, do we say fame? You were like famous in Japan.
Well, kind of.
we're going to come back to this. We're going to have a bit more music, and then I really want to dive a little bit deeper into that whole side of things. Because I know-ish about it, but I actually don't know the details. I'm very excited.
I want to tell you about it like firsthand from my, because you can read about it, but it's different if I tell you about it, you know?
Oh, I'm very excited.
Yeah.
It feels like an exclusive. Probably not. You've probably said it on YouTube, but we'll call it an exclusive. All right, this is Elvis Presley. Good choice.
Yay!
Ooh, how exciting.
Taken the time to show me I wouldn't be lonely. Where will I go? Who will I have to lie? just emptiness inside me. So lonely. Tried so hard each time I just can't make it. Feeling fast vibrations and I just can't take it.
Right, so let's talk. Let's talk more about Japan.
Because, okay.
So, when does I don't even know where we begin with this. When did this start? How did you become a sensation in Japan? This was from YouTube, right?
Yes. Story time.
Story time.
So, I started YouTube when I was 12, and I was kind of making like stupid little vlogs, like, you know, what kind of videos are you going to make when you're 12?
Yeah.
Well, believe me, I found things to make videos about. They weren't very interesting, but at least I was trying on my 1 megapixel phone. I found manga, which is like Japanese comic books, in Waterstones when I was younger.
Oh, wait, I always got confused because I always thought manga was like Japanese porn comic books. No, that's hentai.
That's hentai, yeah.
I get very confused.
It is this.
So manga is just like any.
It's anything.
Any Japanese comics.
Yeah. They're quite cool. Like, there's like usually like long stories and like there's different genres, like magical girl and like romance, anything. Like, it's great. And I really fell in love with it when I was like so young.
Yeah.
And I wanted to like research more about it because I was like, wow, like this is so different to anything that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I searched online, I found like anime, which is like the animated versions of the manga stories, and some of them had like really cool music, and I was like, what's this music? And then some of them had like a dance to the music, and I was like, what is going on? And I was researching it, and then I found other girls online were like copying the dance and posting it, uploading it, and I was like, whoa, this is so cool, because I always loved dancing. So I was like, well, I'm gonna learn the dance and I'm gonna post my own videos.
Amazing.
And that's what I did, and nothing happened for ages. I had like my small little like gang. I remember doing a 200 subscriber special.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this was very, very early days.
Yeah. And then one day, one of my videos went viral, but I didn't know it went viral because it went viral on a different website, which is a Japanese video sharing website called Nikunikodoga. And it was like number one of the ranking on there. But the thing is, people were trickling over to YouTube. So I was like, something's happened. I've been posted somewhere.
Because you were getting little bits and you knew something was going on, but you couldn't put your finger on it.
Exactly. I was like, I don't know where these people are coming from. And then someone told me, and I was like, oh, okay. And like, I started getting like more and more views, and it kind of got bigger and bigger. And then suddenly I was getting like photos of like my video like in a magazine in Japan. I was like, oh
my gosh.
And then suddenly I was getting emails like, Becky, we want to manage you and bring you to Japan so you can like perform and dance and work there. And
oh
I was
gosh.
like, I need to talk to my parents.
Yeah, because you were how old at this point?
13.
13, yeah. Wow. And you were getting people saying that they wanted to manage you.
Yeah, and I was like, well, this is beyond my remit of care for myself. So let's get mom and dad involved. And they spoke to me about it and they were like, this is cool. Their like whole reasoning throughout the whole thing has been, we don't want you to grow up wondering what could have been if I went for that.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Take opportunities because they only come around once. And, absolutely. You know, obviously I was like in school and they were like, you can redo your exams if you need to, you know, but you can't redo opportunities. They only come around once.
Yeah.
So very lucky for my very supportive parents.
That's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and there I went off to Japan at the age of 13.
And did you get put into a group? Or have I made that up?
No, that's the case, yes.
Oh, okay,
so I went out, I did some solo stuff. I like filmed like a dance DVD and some songs. By the way, I'm not a singer by any means. I didn't want to sing at all. I was like, look, I'm a dancer. I can kind of do that. I'm not a singer. I've never posted a singing video. I'm very, very scared of singing. I really don't like doing it. And they were like, no, come on, do it. And I was like, I don't want to. They're like, do it. And I was like, okay. So that was kind of like stressful.
Yeah.
But yes, I did end up being in a group with two other girls the next time that I went to Japan, and we did like a little kind of girl group.
So you were just thrown together with them?
Yeah. I knew them kind of online because we were on the same management.
Okay.
But it was, Becky Cruel and the Cruel Angels.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
We did a little song. It was a really fun trip. I still keep contact with the girls today.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. And how big did it blow up there? Because you've got like, even now, you still have like hardcore fans in Japan. Right.
The thing is about virality and over the years is now. So, for example, my amazing, wonderful housemate, Kelsey Ellison on YouTube, went viral last weekend for
Harry Potter. She was dressed as Hermione.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you lived with her.
Yeah. It's so nice to move to London with a friend, I swear. Yeah. So she went viral. She's had, I think, over like 20 million views at least on this video.
But it wasn't her that posted it. It was Connie who posted it.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, and this goes for both of them, like, virality, she's got some like mainstream press off it, but compared to what I got, which was I got 1 million views and I got about like 20,000-30,000 subscribers from what happened to me when I went viral.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of a career in Japan from that.
Yeah.
And now you can get hundreds of millions of views
and not get anything from it, really.
It doesn't equate to it. And it's so strange. Like, you have to try like 10 times harder, like 100 times harder, get like 10 billion times more lucky to like have the same kind of thing. So there's like the good things and the bad things about, you know, virality and like over the ages, like how it's so different now.
I think it as well, it can depend on what you go viral for.
Yeah.
If you go viral for something very personal and something really, really about you as a person, you know, maybe you share an emotional personal story or something online and that goes viral. I think often you can get a lot of people who are drawn to you and will come and follow you and will want to learn more about you and will want to follow you on whatever it is that you're going to do.
Yeah.
But if you're going viral for, well, in Kelsey's case, like a little comedy Harry, I don't even know what we call it.
A dance, a Harry Potter dance.
She's dressed as Hermione.
She's like voguing to like
Voguing,
Super Mario music.
Yeah,
it's great. Check it out if you've not seen it.
It's really cool and everybody's sharing it.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, I didn't even realise it was her because she's dressed as Hermione.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult for people to go, I want to follow this specific person and I want to know more about them. It's more about that individual piece of content that people are sharing. So how was it for you? Where did you fall into that? Was it people were following you for you, or people were following you for, oh my God, we love this video?
You know what? It's so hard to tell. I think the thing was that there's a little bit of a story because I'm this, what am I, like 13-year-old girl who lives on the Isle of Man, this tiny island in the UK, and I'm so tuned in to this like really weird niche obscure Japanese hobby and you know, two islands all the way across the world, thousands of miles apart, and like the internet's still like, you know, being born, essentially, you know, YouTube's still being born. This is like right at the beginning. So I think that really kind of captured the imagination of a lot of Japanese people in Japan, and they just kind of thought it was quite nice that I was really participating in like this strange aspect of their culture.
Because you were just this little island girl living in your own little world, and somehow you were connected into that whole side of things.
Well, my old manager put it one way. He said the thing about Becky in Japan is that she's not like Ariana Grande, Taylor Swift's fame in Japan, because they're Western stars who also have fame in Japan.
Sure.
Whereas for me, even though I'm not Japanese, I was a Japanese native act because I wasn't really popular anywhere else but Japan.
Yeah.
So, and they were the ones who found me, who like brought me up essentially online. So, I was definitely like a Japanese act, even though I'm not Japanese, never have tried to be or anything like that. People always assume.
And have you found yourself almost like influenced by Japanese culture? Like, do you speak any Japanese? Presumably you speak a little bit if you spent a lot of time there.
Here's another fun fact.
Oh, here we go.
I did my GCSEs, as you do, and I elected to take a Japanese GCSE as well. My school didn't run it. They just were kind enough to facilitate me taking it. And I got an A, and that's the only
Yay!
A I've ever got in anything. And it's the one that I taught myself, essentially. So
that's so interesting.
Right? It shows that when you're passionate about something, you can really succeed.
Yeah.
There's a life hack for you.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I've just learned an awful lot about you, Becky. But we're going to play a little game. We're going to play some two truths, one lie.
Ooh, okay.
So get your three facts ready.
Okay.
We'll have a bit of Carly Rae Jepsen.
Oh, yes.
And then we'll come back and we'll learn all about you.
Brill.
Very excited.
Listen, just leave or stay.
Uh-oh, I've just spilled my drink. I was just very excited about Carly Rae Jepsen is what happened there. I love a bit of Carly. All right. Two truths, one lie. So for our lovely listeners who don't know how this game works, Becky has three facts about herself, but one of them is completely fabricated, and I'm going to figure out which one that is. All right, so take it away, Becky.
All right. So, fact number one. I've been to Japan 16 times.
Oh, well, okay, well. It seems like it very well could be true, because obviously what we've just talked about, mm-hmm. your career in Japan, that you love Japan, that you would have had loads of opportunities to go over there. But 16 seems like a lot.
Yeah.
Because when you were going over, like when you first went over, you were there for quite an extended period, right?
Well, I obviously was still in school in the UK.
Oh, so you had to be coming back,
bit
and
of back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
16 still, though. It's quite a few.
16 is quite a few times. Oh, I don't. And you do. And you got an A in your Japanese GCSE.
Doesn't mean that I'm very good, but I'm good enough to get an A.
Say something in Japanese to me.
Konbanwa. Good evening.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Thanks.
Say something else.
Oh, like what?
I don't know. Say, tell me I'm beautiful.
Oh.
Your skills are failing you.
Kirei desu.
Thank you.
I think that's right. Someone might correct me.
No, nobody from Japan's listening. We're fine.
Right, fine. My viewers might be, and they probably know a little bit as well. They can call me out on it later.
Hello, Japanese viewers, if you are indeed listening. I hope they are. That would be nice.
That would be quite cool.
We love the Japanese.
I was looking at my YouTube stats the other day, and I've got one person who gave my video a like in Oman recently.
Oman is in the Middle East.
I think so.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. I was like, I was just looking at it, and like, there was all these like one somewhere, one another place, and I was like, wow, this is so cool.
It's always nice to see when you, because I think sometimes when you look at almost like your viewers,
yeah.
You can look at a number,
yeah,
and sometimes it's nice to think about that every single one of those numbers is an actual real person.
Yeah.
Like every single video view. Like, because often I get like kind of like in this world, sometimes you can start comparing yourself to other people, and it can be very much like, oh, that person gets 1 million views on their videos and I only get 10,000 or whatever it is. And then I'm like, hang on a minute. That's 10,000 individual people.
Yeah.
Who've clicked and watched, and you know, 10 people is incredible. Never
yeah.
mind 10,000, never mind 1 million. It's insane when you start to think of them as individual people.
I don't know if you ever did this as well, but when you started getting like a little bit bigger on YouTube, for me, I was always trying to benchmark against things that I knew, like how, you know, what this number equated to.
Mm.
And so where I'm from, the Isle of Man, I think I first did it for how many people were in my school, which was 2,000.
Yeah.
Then I did it for how many people live on the Isle of Man, which is 80,000. And when I got 80,000 subscribers, I was
like, that's everyone here.
That's everyone here. I was like, whoa. It was so cool. That was that was 100,000 was exciting, but 80,000 was like the thing that I've been always thinking about since I was like, what, like 14, 15. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's
where
incredible.
I'm from. Every single person.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So give me your next truth or lie.
All right. So... next fact about me is the first time I saw a squirrel was 3 years ago.
What?
I know. I was told you that they were a bit random and a bit bad.
What? Like, how? How? That must be a lie. How? Just explain to me how you've never... Do they not have squirrels on the Isle of Man?
No, they don't.
None? Zero squirrels?
You know what they do have? Wallabies.
What's a wallaby? Is that like a is that like a koala?
A little bit like a kangaroo. But they're part of the natural ecosystem of the island.
And they're like kangaroos?
Yeah.
And on the Isle of Man in the UK?
They bob around, yes.
Is this another lie?
Is this three truths or not?
I'm sorry. What?
Because, we have a little thing called the wildlife park, and some of the wallabies broke out. They had enough, and they bred like wildfire.
I've just been showed a picture of a wallaby.
Look at that
little man. He's like a baby kangaroo.
They're very cute.
Oh, I love a wallaby.
Yeah, well, come over and you can, you know, see all the ones you want in the wild.
So then they're not naturally there.
No.
They were part of a wildlife park and they escaped and now they bred wildly.
Yes, wildly bred.
Apparently Regent's Park in London is full of wild parrots, and it's because they escaped. It's apparently because they all escaped from the zoo like 20, 30 years ago or something.
That's really
so
cool.
So if you walk around Regent's Park, you see all these parrots everywhere. And apparently that's why.
Oh.
Yeah, facts.
I have to try that.
Yeah, and apparently they really like cheese or something. Cheese? Is it cheese? I don't know. I'm going to get everything wrong. Wait, so the first time you saw a squirrel was 3 years ago.
Yes.
Why are there no squirrels on the Isle of Man? The wallabies eat them.
I don't know if wallabies are that vicious.
I don't understand.
Some animals just aren't on the Isle of Man. We don't have any deer. I think the first time I saw a deer in real life was probably like 2 weeks ago.
What if I got a load of squirrels, go to Hyde Park, get a load of squirrels in a basket, bring them over, let them free?
I think that the Environmental Health Department would have some stern words for you if you did that.
Uh-oh. We won't tell them. Okay. We won't tell them it was me.
Okay, fine. It'll be our secret.
Secret. We just said it live on the radio, but secret. I feel like, but you've been to the UK, and they have squirrels in Japan, right?
I've not seen one in Japan.
Oh, no, maybe they don't. But you've been to the UK a fair bit.
A few times.
I can literally see a squirrel out the window right now. I don't understand how you could have never
saw one.
I feel like it might be true, but I can't commit. I feel like both of the things you've said are true so far.
Well, and wait for number three.
Yeah, I need your third fact.
Okay, let me get it up for you.
Never seen a squirrel.
I know. My final fact about myself
okay.
is that one of my current dreams is to become a playwright.
Ooh, well, I know you're very wordly.
Yeah. Worldly or wordy?
Both.
Okay, great.
You love a word. You love,
I do.
You do like to write.
Dictionaries, etymology, it's all there.
Have you written a book?
No.
I feel like this one might be the lie, because I think you may have a secret dream to be a novelist.
Oh.
And not actually a playwright.
Okay.
And I feel like this may be why you're trying to trip me up. But tell me more about why you want to be a playwright specifically.
Well, I've just always loved going to the theatre. Mm-hmm. We have a really beautiful theatre back home on the island called the Gaiety Theatre. They're always playing different kinds of productions.
Cute.
I did English literature at A-level. I read some amazing plays. I just think it's like such a cool format of written word, because especially now that we live in such a like fast-paced social media landscape where, you know, you have to digest a tweet. You don't read a blog post. You read a tweet. You read an Instagram caption.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, totally.
Plays are kind of like a condensed book in a way, where you're getting the dialogue and you're getting like stage directions and everything, but then, you know, it's quicker to read it. And it's,
I just think you're lying to me.
Really?
I just think you're lying. Something
doesn't sit right with you.
Doesn't sit right with me.
Who's getting VIP tickets to my West End debut?
Are you telling me that you actually like to enjoy to read a play?
Yeah.
Because nothing drove me more nothing ground my gears. Nothing. I can't even get my words out. I'm so upset. Nothing annoyed me more in school when they made you read a play.
That was my favourite bit.
No, I was like, this isn't meant to be read. This is meant to be watched. Like, I don't want to read Death of a Salesman.
Oh, I love Death of a Salesman.
Like, we love Arthur Miller. Did he pass away?
Probably.
He was a great playwright. He was excellent. But I don't ever want to read Death of a Salesman.
No, ever. Not again.
Never, ever again. Like, no. So, I don't know. I'm finding it hard to believe that you like to read plays. That that seems like a lie to me. Like, I can understand you liking to go and go to the theatre and see a play and wanting to write it for that reason. But wanting to write a play because you think it's fun to read plays.
Yeah, I don't know. I like writing. I like reading. I like watching them. I just think it's like a 360 experience, you know?
360 experience. I think you're lying to me, Becky.
Is that your final answer?
No, I have another question.
Okay, go on.
About your squirrel thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the zoo?
I don't think so.
You are lying to me.
I'm trying to think, like, as of when? When did I
get... You're a liar.
I don't think I've ever been to a zoo. I've been to the wildlife park on the Isle of Man.
You've never been... Right, no.
I don't think I've been to the zoo.
Final answer. I see right through your lies is that you have been to Japan 16 times. Is your secret dream is to be a playwright. And the squirrel thing is bullshit, because I don't believe a word you're saying.
So... Is that you're saying that the squirrel is the lie?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Am I? Yeah. Yeah, I am. Final answer.
You were so on track.
Oh,
and then you swerved at the last moment.
I knew I shouldn't have asked about the zoo.
You shouldn't have asked.
So wait, so you actually haven't been to the zoo?
I don't think I've been to
the zoo.
How
do you not know?
Like, I feel like... No, okay, I went, like, last Monday for the first time. I went to Bristol Zoo. That's why I was not sure, because I was like, I swear that I've been to a zoo, but I can't think of one. It was really recent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because my housemate is 28 years old, and I took him to the zoo for the first time in his life on Friday.
Yeah, oh, wow. We're like, both having our first zoo experience.
I was like, how are you adults getting to adulthood without having seen, like, an elephant or a giraffe?
Well, I've been from a really small island, so I don't know what his excuse is.
So you have, the squirrel thing is true.
The squirrel thing is true.
And the playwright thing.
It's not true.
I knew it. Why did I hedge my bet?
I thought I could get you by saying, like, oh, it's like social media. I mean, yeah, I do enjoy plays, but I don't know. I thought it'd be so obscure that you'd be like, oh, maybe she's got that aspiration.
Do you have any aspiration to be a writer at all?
I don't think so. I think I am quite a good writer, but I'm not sure what I would write about, you know? Like, I've not had that, like, flame light bulb moment where I've been like, I need to write this.
I know what you could write about.
What?
You could write a novel about a girl who grows up on a little island and goes on this whirlwind adventure in Japan at a very young age.
Oh, well, that's the concept, isn't it?
Like, imagine all the little girls that would like to read that.
That would be quite cute. Are you thinking fiction or fact?
I'm thinking do it as fiction, but draw from your own life experiences, because then you can make it, like, crazy and, like, have all these, like, crazy things happen.
Yeah, that would be quite cute. I could, like, live the, you know, the life that's, like, my alter ego life. Where, like, I've had my life has gone differently.
Yeah, I
not
like that.
I have any regrets, but, you know, you get to live two lives if you write a book.
I'm actually really, really glad that the thing about you wanting to be a playwright wasn't true.
Why?
Because if it was true, I really pissed all over it, didn't I?
Yeah, you were like, Becky, this is not you. Come on. That's my dream, Callum.
I'm saying I won this, even though I didn't get it right.
You were really drilling down hard. I had to think of a lot of reasons why I wanted to write a play. When you said Arthur Miller for The Death of a Salesman, I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty correct about who's the playwright. I don't really remember.
Yeah, exactly.
I did enjoy plays in school, though.
Did you?
Yeah, 100%.
Did you have to read Richard II?
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Jesus Christ, that was a slog.
Was it dry?
It was. We love Shakespeare, but, you know.
We stan.
Not to be read in 2018 is all I'm saying. We have a lovely phone guest joining us soon. Yeah, and I'm very, very excited to talk about her. But we'll have another one of your choices, I think. Molly Palehound.
Yes.
Sounds great.
It's a bop.
Let's have it.
Thank you.
I am definitely going to pronounce this name wrong now. I'm terrible with names, but we are joined by the amazing Meredith O. Help me out, Meredith.
O'Shaughnessy.
Is that an Irish name?
It is an Irish name, yeah.
Knew it. I'm joined in the studio by the lovely Becky Krull. And Meredith, we want to hear all about... It's macarons or macaroons, because we mix them up, right?
Well, macaron is the French way of saying it, and macaroon is the English way of saying it. So we say macaron, but it depends what you want to be able to do with fancy or not.
I always thought they were different things, because I thought one was the like fancy French thing and one was like the American coconut thing.
Yeah.
Is that not true?
We made macaroons in school and they were coconut.
There's technically three different types of macaroons in the English way. It all gets very complicated. All you need to know is that we do the gorgeous, delicious French version that are super light and all like lovely and look gorgeous, rather than kind of the clunky old style coconutty one.
Good. So you're doing the good version of the macaron.
Well, yeah. I don't want to like be against the other one, but yeah, you know, yes, we are. We're doing the great one.
Okay, so for a little bit of context for our listeners, because they're probably very confused about what on earth we're talking about here. You founded the company Oh La La Macarons. Am I saying that right?
Oh La La Macarons. Yeah.
And the reason we've got you on the show today is to talk about one specific type that you made. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? And I'm sure you know which one I'm referring to.
Absolutely, yes. Well, we made the world's first tampon-shaped macaron. So we decided that we heard about a charity called Bloody Good Period, which is this incredible charity that is was created to try and combat period poverty, because 1 in 10 women and girls in the UK alone can't afford sanitary protection each month. And we, I decided that I wanted to do something about it and I wanted to contribute to the conversation. And I thought, well, I have this macaron company and what's something that's utterly frivolous and lots of fun that can actually add to a conversation? They're a little bit shocking, but they're actually very beautiful. And so I launched the first ones to kind of get people talking about periods a little bit more and not be so ashamed and embarrassed about them.
I think it's absolutely incredible. And you said there that it's kind of shocking and almost like it takes you aback when you see them. But I kind of think that it almost isn't normal that we have that reaction to it. You know, people, we've kind of got this culture in our society where we're afraid to talk about periods when it's such a natural thing. You know, it literally happens to every woman or every person with a vagina. And it's almost kind of backwards. So I think it's amazing that you've done, and it's such a fun thing as well.
What I wanted to do is, you know, there's obviously an incredibly serious issue about kind of our mental shame, and when you look at kind of poverty and mental shame combined and how that silences women and how young girls can't go to school and women can't go to work, and even down to kind of, you know, if somebody has a heavy flow and they're worried about leaking and all these kind of ramifications which kind of separate women out from society potentially on a monthly basis. But it was also, and that's a really, really serious topic, but also sometimes to get into these serious topics, to have these really valuable conversations, you need to have something fun that you can pin onto it and go, listen, actually, we want to have these chats and these really kind of serious political conversations are happening, but also let's just all be able to talk about it a little bit more, because if we can all talk about it with a little bit less shame, then it can only be a good thing. So I guess that's what I was trying to do with the tampon macaron.
Yeah, and I definitely think you've hit that sweet spot in the middle ground where you've done something which is really serious and really important, and it's raising awareness about a really important thing and raising money as well, right? Raising money for the charity, yeah. But you've also created something fun and something that people can talk about online and talk about with each other. Like when I saw this, I was like, oh my god, we have to discuss this. This is and such a. I mean, I'm really interested in knowing what like the thought process was. How did you come to just suddenly go, right, you know what, that's it, tampon macarons?
Well, I don't just own Ooh La La. I also own a kind of a branding company where I create larger scale projects for brands, and mostly they're about starting conversations. It's about how can we take everyday things and actually start some interesting conversations with them. And some of those conversations might be fun. I did something with a well-known washing machine maker where I converted washing machines into cocktail makers, for instance.
No, you didn't.
But yes, I did.
Oh my God, that sounds so cool. Like, how does that even work?
So, well, that's a whole different subject, but you have to get someone, find someone that can convert them. And we were pouring cocktail mix into top and they were spinning around and we had a tap on the front so that people could drink cocktails out of washing machines.
That's beautiful. Like,
that's so cool.
Super fun. So it's taking those sorts of things, but being like, how can we take something that's normal and everyday and things that we're using every day and how can we look at them in a new light? And I wanted to do something that actually kind of had a bit of meaning behind it, that really was contributing to a subject. And, you know, as you mentioned on this occasion, with the box of macarons, for every box that's sold, we donate £10, which is enough money to buy a woman's sanitary protection for a month. So that's just part and parcel of also just having these chats. So I guess the way I thought about it, I was a bit like, what is something that is really easily recognisable? What is everyone can look at tampon? And also, what's something which people try to hide all the time? You know, I was talking to Gabby, who runs Bloody Good Period, and she said, I run a period charity and I still put a tampon up my arm when I go to the toilet when I'm on my period. And it shouldn't have to be like that. So I was like, let's take something that's really visual, really obvious what it is, and twist it on its head and make something that people want to buy as gifts to their friends, that they want to... We've had men buying from their girlfriends, we've had people buying from people at work. So it's been really lovely, the reaction to them, actually.
And are they still available? Like, could I order some online?
You absolutely could. So the website is www.ohlala.co.
Oh, I'm definitely gonna. I just want some in my house. I think for maybe all that. I mean, it's almost entirely female team here at FUBAR, so I feel like it's a
team gift.
It'd be a great gift to give to my team. They're cheering behind the glass. They're definitely all for this. I have another question for you, Meredith.
Yeah.
How do you think somebody like me, a man, you know, maybe not me, many, you know, any guy out there, what do you think that men can do to kind of contribute to almost normalizing conversations around these things? Because I think a lot of the stigma and shame almost comes from a male judgment.
It's interesting. I was having this conversation actually with a taxi driver, a black cab driver.
As you do.
And I was telling him all about the campaign, and he was actually really behind me. He was like, I think that's a great idea. It's wonderful. And he said, the thing is, it's not that most men don't think there's anything shameful or bad or wrong about periods. It's just they don't understand them because it's not something that they experience. And when we don't experience something, it's really hard to have empathy with it or to kind of talk about it at all. So it's really great that these conversations are happening and people, you know, these barriers are being broken down. But I guess for guys, it's just kind of being a bit aware of, like, not making a joke about, oh, you're on that, you know, you're on the blob and it's that time of the month, being hormonal, but just being like, understanding that, you know, sometimes it's not very pleasant to, you know, be bleeding and feeling not your best, and also to be reading about kind of this issue of period poverty. I guess the most dispiriting thing is when you have men online, not a lot, just a few, kind of being like, oh, I think people are making it up and it's like, this isn't really a problem. And it's like, well, it's not a problem for you, but listen to women. It's a problem for them. And so I think it's just being supportive, really. I think that, you know, and I just think conversations, like, everything starts with a conversation, doesn't it? Everything starts with people just being able to talk about something openly and listening to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm almost, I don't want to say guilty, but I think I'm almost like, I feel like I could be doing better. I think because, you know, because I'm a gay man as well, you know, I don't date women. I'm not in relationships with women. So I almost have that. It's another degree of separation where, you know, obviously I have female friends and things, but periods aren't really as much in my life as much as if I was a straight man or a woman. And I feel like, you know, if a girl takes out a tampon in front of me, I don't react at all, really. But, like, I think I'm always a bit like, oh, I don't really understand that thing. But I'm not. Yeah. But I think I've always been a little bit like, I'm not going to take an interest in that thing because it's nothing to do with me. But I think that's a bad way of thinking. I think everybody should try and educate themselves about it, even if it doesn't directly affect you, about other human experiences and the people around you. Just it's a better way to understand one another. And I think education is really, really important, whether it's education we get from other people or education that we almost teach ourselves.
Yeah, but I think it's also, you know, on that point, it isn't just women that experience periods. Also, trans men have
periods.
Yes,
of course, yeah.
And that's incredibly, you know, tough for them, especially if you're kind of having all sorts of other feelings about kind of gender and things like that. So it isn't just the female thing. But
yeah.
I do understand that it is good to pay an interest, but you also, it just needs to just be part of more of, you know, we all go to the bathroom, you know, and you don't necessarily have a conversation with somebody when they go into the bathroom going, oh, what did you go and do in there?
Yeah, sure.
You have a lovely time. You've been there a long time. Is that a good one for you? So it's not like it's making something where somebody, you know, we all have to talk about it, but certainly I know kind of men when I was younger might have seen a picture, a passing around pictures of women when they might have had some bleeding on the back of their clothes,
right? And
you know, all that shaming, it's the shaming of the situation and the isolating people, that's the thing that's really bad. And if you know, as with all things, if you see somebody else do it, call it out. If you say, you know, oh, my girlfriend has her period today, or she's not feeling great for whatever, and someone goes, ooh, call it out. Be like,
yeah,
what's weird about that? What's wrong about that? And it's the calling out of these things which I think is, you know, the start of changing them.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really, really important point. Meredith, you've been amazing. I think it's everything. I can only commend you on all the work you're doing. I think it's incredible. I think you're injecting new life into a conversation that needs to be had, and you're doing it in a fun way, and we can only celebrate that. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Can you remind us again, for any listeners who may want to get some of these tampon macarons, mm-hmm. remind us again where they can do that?
So online, it's www.ohlala.co. So it's ooh-la-la.co. And also you can look at our Instagram, which is ooh-la-la-ltd, so ooh-la-la limited on Instagram as well.
And you do other different types of macarons as well, don't you? I have written in front of me, I've not seen these myself, but that you've done miniature avocados and sandwiches and hamburgers, unicorns and dishwasher tablets?
Yes, I did a, for the larger agency that I was talking about, the branding thing, we did a large event and I had people walking into a dishwasher, an oversized dishwasher, and eating macarons in shape of dishwasher tablets
that
out
is,
of the dishwasher.
You're a branding genius. You're absolutely incredible. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Meredith. It's been a treat. And I'm going to play you out. I'm hoping you like this. I'm going to play you out with a little bit of Belinda Carlisle. How do you feel about
amazing.
That?
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for having the conversation. It's really, you know, it's really valuable, and I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks so much, Meredith. See you later.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Dance with me, baby, in the summer rain. I remember the rain on her skin.
FUBAR Radio presents
Filmish with Sean Walsh and Mark Simmons.
We are very honoured, privileged to have with us Oscar-winning director of The Artist, Michelle Hazanavicius. Do you like any Hugh Grant films? We just played a song from a Hugh Grant film. Are you a Hugh Grant fan?
Yes, and
yes.
Actually, yeah.
Get in.
Yes, of course. I love him. He's brilliant. I don't know if he's brilliant as an actor exactly, but he's brilliant as a Hugh Grant.
Yeah, exactly.
Every Friday,
Filmish with Sean Walsh and Mark Simmons
from 1 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
How do you feel about dating apps, Becky?
Apps, so
steer clear.
My limited experience is obviously, I've said about a million times, I'm from the Isle of Man. It's a small island.
Not a lot of people there.
Not a very big radius either. So, first of all, the people that you do meet are like, oh, I think I know you. Oh, I think I know your dad. Mm-hmm. Oh, were you that girl on the TV? And it's like, okay, bye. First of all.
Sure.
Then you get random people from like Northern Ireland and Cumbria, which is like the surrounding areas.
Yeah.
It's like,
you're too
what
far
is
away.
Going on? Yeah, but I mean, I don't think it was for me. I really, like, especially because like, I live such like a digital life. I prefer meeting people in real life, and like if there's a connection, there's a connection, you know?
I often find it a little bit like, I don't mind the world knowing my business. You know, I put myself online and I don't mind people knowing things about me, especially if I've made the decision to put that out there. But sometimes on dating apps, I may meet somebody and, you know, I'm not saying that they already know who I am, but they may go and Google me.
Right.
And then next minute, they can find all kinds of YouTube videos that I've made. They can find tweets and for years and years and years of tweets and Instagrams, and they can learn so much about you. And I'm like, I like maybe on a first date, maybe I want to tell you that thing about me. Like, and I almost feel like I'm perhaps losing something by not being able to share that story I wanted to share with you. I actually was on a date once and I went to tell them a story and they were like, oh yeah, I already know. I watched a video on that. I was like, I want to tell you the story. Like,
no,
let me tell you the story.
Totally. Like, I think it really detracts because they start forming an image of you and your personality.
Before they've even met you.
Right? And it's like, you know, I want you to know the offline me, not the online me. The online me is public. I want to share it with you, like the private me, you know?
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a little game for you, Becky.
Okay.
In this game, instead of you're going to decide whether you're going to say yes or no, so swipe left or right to people, instead of based on pictures, it's going to be based on a singular fact about them.
Ooh.
You just get one fact about them.
Oh, wow.
And you're going to decide if you want to date them or not.
Okay.
Okay, right. So do you remember which way's which?
No.
Nobody ever does. Like, I use these apps all the time, and even I forget. Right is yes, left is no.
Right is yes, left is no.
You look very confused.
I'm going to say swipe yes and swipe no.
Okay, fine. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Okay, so your first one is your date, having repeatedly texting, saying they're only 5 minutes away, eventually turns up unapologetically an hour late.
No. Goodbye.
Just completely no.
Swipe no. Yes. That's one thing that I feel very strongly about is respect for other people's time.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to sit around waiting for you. You shouldn't have to sit around waiting for me. I feel very strongly about being late to things.
I'm completely with you. Like, I'm a ridiculously punctual person.
Mm-hmm.
And I get like a real stress and a real panic about being late somewhere. Even if I say I'm going to meet somebody at 8 p.m., me turning up at 8:02 is unacceptable.
Unacceptable, yes.
Like, I will be there at 10 to 8 at the latest. Like, I always make sure I'm punctual and always make sure that I'm on time. But I think other people, like, I have friends and it's almost like it just doesn't... It's almost like it's not in them.
Yeah.
You know?
Some people just like, breeze through life and they don't care and it's, like, not that important to them. And it's, like, that's fair enough. But I don't know. I just think that I wouldn't want somebody waiting around for me and
exactly.
I don't want to be waiting around for other people, you know? At least the communication needs to be like that and the intent. Like, this person turning up an hour late, unapologetic.
On the first date as well.
Yeah, that's a bad situation.
I think I would probably swipe no as well.
Yeah, swipe no.
I'm not having it. Like, I might give them a second chance.
I mean,
maybe,
if I really
liked them.
You know what? They might open up like later on in the date and be like, the reason why I was late is this and this and this. You know, if they've got a good reason.
If they've got a good reason, then I'm fine. You know?
Yeah.
You couldn't help that you got stuck on the tube for 45 minutes. That wasn't your fault, you know?
Yeah.
All right, your next one. Breadsticks are on the table. Your date puts them in their teeth and pretends to be a walrus.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I like that.
That makes me like them even
more. Yeah, me too. That's like goofy, but like that's fun. Like I like someone who can just be fun.
I'm really glad we agree on this.
Yeah, good. Okay. Maybe we should like have, you know, be swiping together.
Oh, yeah. Right. We said different things. Okay. Thought you wanted to be a walrus.
Where's
with me.
Where's the breadsticks?
Can we get some breadsticks in the studio, please, lovely producers? If they conjure up breadsticks, I'll be very, very impressed. Mm. I'm glad we agree on that.
Yeah, like,
we're very much in agreement with that. And to be honest, that would probably be me doing that.
Yeah, same, so, honestly. I'm like, let me turn around and show you this really cool trick.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh... I wish you
easily impressed. You're having dinner at a restaurant and your date refuses to take off their sunglasses throughout the entirety of the date.
No. The only reason why they do that is because they're really, really up themselves or they're really, really hungover.
Or really, really famous.
No, that comes into category one, really, really up themselves.
Yeah. Okay, so this actually happened to me.
No, it didn't.
It actually did. But he had reason. He was very famous. And
okay.
I met him and he did say, look, I don't want to be seen. I'm just going to wear my sunglasses. And he also was wearing a cap and he had the cap pulled quite down, quite far down.
Okay.
And yeah, he did leave them on for the interview. It was more of a hookup than a date, but even still,
that's kind of fair enough.
And I understood, but it was the fact that he explained it to me and said why. So yeah, for that reason, I don't think I would swipe left to this. I think I would need it. It depends on their reasoning and depends on whether they share that reasoning with you. If they just turn up in sunglasses and just don't take them off,
The reason I think is the fine part there. If someone just rocks up and it depends if are they the black sunglasses or are they the coloured lenses?
Because
the coloured lenses you can wear indoors. So I've been victim of wearing my coloured lens sunglasses on the train, and
especially if they look cute and they match your outfit.
Exactly. But if it is a black lens glasses, I can barely see out of them unless it's really sunny. So especially if you're in a dark restaurant and it's like, what's this on the menu? Let me check off my sunglasses, you know?
I have a confession to make. I've been wearing my sunglasses all day and I've been wearing them indoors. And it's because
Did you forget that they were on?
No, I went to Mighty Hoopla at the weekend.
Okay.
And I decided to cover myself in glitter.
Ah.
And I bought a little glue adhesive that's meant for your skin to apply the glitter to my face. And I think I was like allergic to it or something because it's like burned all under my eyes, which you can probably see a little bit.
The thing is though, all this show I've been like looking at the tiny little bit of glitter under your eye.
Yeah, I'm still covered in glitter.
I can't
get it off me.
That's fine, I quite like it.
So I've been wearing sunglasses to hide the burns under my eyes.
I don't think that your skin has fled up that badly, but obviously
Thanks.
If it's not what you're used to, then it doesn't make you feel super confident.
I almost wore sunglasses in the studio.
Oh, I'd be like, Callum's too famous for me now.
I'm going to put my sunglasses on. What would you have done if I had just been sat the whole time? Is it a look with the headphones everything else?
They are a look.
It's a look.
But I don't know. I really have to look into people's eyes to talk to them, so...
You can kind of see my eyes.
No, you can see my eyes, but I can barely see yours.
Okay, no sunglasses.
You know what, though? When I wear those kind of mirrored lenses, I really like it because I can look at people on the street.
Yeah, you can stare at people.
Yeah,
it's
and
brilliant.
Like, oh, it's the best.
Favorite game. Love staring at people. We've got one more for you. It's your first date, and they pretend to propose so you can get a free dessert.
Okay. This is quite fun.
Have I been brought into this game? Like, have they said, like, what we're going to do is we can get a free dessert if I pretend to propose to you. Are you in? And I'm like, yeah, I'm in. That sounds like so much fun. Like, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
But if they just suddenly get down on one knee and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And then afterwards they're like, get a free dessert now. Then I'd be a bit like, okay, well, a bit of warning would have been nice.
Yeah, definitely. 100% with you. They need to, you know, make it about the two of us rather than just them doing like a random thing and I'd be like, oh, what on earth's going on?
I hate being put on the spot.
Do you?
Nothing. There's nothing worse than being put. One of my friends loves to put me on the spot all the time. He'll just suddenly pop up and like shove a camera in my face and I'm like, no. stop. It's the worst.
You know what? As a YouTubey thing, I don't know if you get this as well, but like, I feel when I'm hanging out with my real friends, I don't want a camera anywhere near us because I feel like it almost becomes a little bit disingenuous, especially when you're with other YouTuber friends, that it is kind of like, if there's a camera present, then we're not really having that one-on-one time, you know?
Secret pet peeve is hanging out with a YouTuber and within 30 seconds of you being with them, there's a camera in your face.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not a fan.
And with your non-YouTube friends, it's like, I don't know if you're prepared to consent to being online public for like all of eternity. Like, I just would rather not vlog people who don't already make videos, and then I'd rather not vlog people who do make videos. So turns out that I just kind of get a bit stuck.
Well, I think we're in agreement there, Becky.
Yeah, I think
we're in the minority though as YouTubers.
Yeah,
YouTubers, we're YouTubers who don't like being filmed. That's weird. Maybe we should get a different job.
I don't mind people filming me. I just feel really bad about filming other people. I don't want them to think that I'm just there for the content, you know.
Anyway, do you want to be in my vlog? I'm just going to do a quick vlog, Becky.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, everyone.
All right, I think it's time for a bit more music. This is our absolute jam and a half. This is 5 in the Morning, Charlie XCX.
I think you're 1 in a million. Your diamonds are fake, you ain't golden. But I only fuck with the ones who are rare enough, real enough, gotta keep going. It's 5 in the morning and I'm going all in. I'm busy balling. Funny how wherever I wanna go, you wanna be that girl. Pull up on stone with your click, glacier all up on your wrist. Think you the sickest, or you got diseases, but you ain't got nothing on this. I can see you talk, got a big mouth. Would you stick around for the calm down? 24/7, I'm 365. Away from me, heaven, I'm here till I die. I'm going all in. It's 5 in the morning, I'm busy balling. I ain't even stopping. It's 5 in the morning, I'm so devoted. I'm going all in. It's 5 in the morning, I'm busy balling. I ain't even stopping. It's 5 in the morning, yeah. I'm in my element every day, but they can't you on a piece cause it's tasty. We on the road, we don't stop till the bottles are popped and the pills aren't re-wasted. It's 5 in the morning and I'm going all in. I'm busy ballin'. Funny how wherever I wanna go, you wanna be that too. Pull up on stone with your click, glacier all up on your wrist. Think you the sickest, or you got diseases, but you ain't got nothing on this. I can see your dog got a big mouth. Would you stick around for the calm down? 24/7, I'm 365. Away from me, heaven.
Excited to have Rams in the building with me. I just want to double check if your ting has stopped calling you at 7 a.m. because that is horrible.
No, I'll speak to him. So a couple of different girls at
okay.
around the 7 o'clock time.
All right, okay. So it's a thing that you like to do. 7 a.m. is your sort of witching hour, is it?
Early calls are the best.
So tell me, where are these other girls from?
They're from different areas in London.
London?
Some cross country.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in one or two.
In maybe America?
I would say, oh, no. I can't say that. I was about to say.
Okay, well, I'm from Walthamstow, so if you've not got any there, I'm free. If you're up for it, no? Okay, next time maybe.
Every Thursday, Harriet Rose from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
In just a little bit, we are going to be reacting to your sex confession. So if you want, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, anything like that, you can email callum@fubarradio.com. It is completely anonymous and confidential, so we won't expose your secrets to the world. So do send in your confessions if you would like some advice or just a little bit of conversation from Becky and I. But before we do that, I think we should talk about what every fucking person on the planet is talking about, and that is Love Island.
Oh,
oh, and I'm coming straight in with the controversy.
Okay, go on.
We can talk about how much we love the show. I haven't watched any of the new show.
I haven't either.
Uh-oh.
And by this point, every episode is like an hour and a half long. I've got about 5 hours to catch up on. And they're going to do a new episode tonight. I'm not ready. That means it's going to get even more hours. I'm going to need to book a day off work to get all of this watching in. And I don't know if I'm up to the task, honestly.
Becky's very stressed about this.
I'm really pressed about this. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's a lot. Like, I have not enough hours in the day.
No.
I've got to sit here for 2 hours and talk to you.
Oh, God. That's the worst of it.
there's been a lot of controversy about the new season, and I guess Love Island as a whole. There's been a lot of people online calling it out because of the lack of diversity, particularly when it comes to, well, it's two things really. It's it's body types,
yes,
and it's the lack of LGBT plus inclusion. So there's been a lot of criticism for the show because they're kind of having, you know, loads of these like really thin, like size 8, size 10 girls on there,
yeah.
And then all the guys have like ripped six packs, and yeah, that's all you see on the show. And there's been a lot of people saying, look, like it's 2018, you need to be a little bit more diverse, you need to show different body types, you need to show anyone that watching that show that, because that's not the norm, like it's not the norm.
No.
We're showing it on TV all the time, but like, I don't have a six pack. I'm like, one of my friends has a six pack. You know what I mean?
It's a full-time job keeping it up,
yeah.
I swear, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, it's really upsetting to see that it's, I don't think it's being considered, and if it has, obviously, is it more hurtful that it's not being considered, or is it more hurtful that it has been considered
and they've decided against it.
Yeah, so, you know, you like to think the best of people in these situations, but I don't know what the truth is, honestly. And, you know, it's sad because everyone can go to, where is it, like Mallorca or something, and, like, fall in love. Doesn't matter what you look like. Doesn't matter, you know, what your body's like. And I get it for the ratings. I mean, we know that as YouTubers. If you put a bikini girl in the thumbnail, it's going to get views.
Yeah.
But, like, I just think that they should use their power for good a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with having a guy with a six pack in there. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a size 10 girl in there. But we want to see a diverse range of people. We don't just want to see one type of person. And I don't think that the ratings would dip. Maybe
no.
I'm wrong, but I just don't think that the ratings would dip if you just included some different size people, different body types.
You know what? Whenever I hear anybody talking about Love Island, it's not about, wow, that they've got such a good body. Wow, like they're so fit.
It's about the drama,
the people, the interpersonal connections. And that's, you know, that's fundamentally why we like watching the show, is because the people are interesting and funny and...
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't really matter what they look like.
So I'm absolutely with everybody calling out the show, and I really hope that they listen. And I guess it's too late for this season, but I do hope in for future seasons that they do change things up, because it's needed and it's important. And now, and I'm going to be a little bit more passionate about this fact: the lack of LGBT plus inclusion. So presumably, because I'm not a big Love Island fan, I'm going to be honest, please don't come for me on Twitter. Presumably there hasn't been any LGBT plus romances on Love Island in the past, or has there?
I also am not a big Love Island watcher,
not
so
big Love
I
Island
don't really
fans.
Know, but I'm sure you've heard this. 2016, there were two bisexual women on
yes.
the show, and there was a kind of air of question, especially with the viewers, of will they get together or not? And
which is exciting.
It is exciting. And I believe, don't quote me, but they were told by the producers that they had to end up with a boy in order to win the prize at the end. Or to be in the running to win the prize. Which is ridiculous.
That
Why?
Is absurd.
Why?
Absolutely. Why?
I think it makes it way better if they're like, no, all these boys are trash. The girl's the one for me.
Yeah.
You know?
And surely that would make much more entertaining content,
right.
You know, to see some LGBT plus inclusion would be great. And
I think I'd be like tuning in, like I would commit those hours of my day into watching it a bit more,
yeah,
if I knew that was like a possibility. But to just hear that they completely shut down the idea, I think that's really disrespectful and really, really hurtful. And it, you know, it contributes to like bi erasure.
It's more than that. It's discrimination.
Yeah.
I would say,
yeah,
like
completely.
That's a horrendous thing to say, and
yeah.
I can't believe that was a thing that actually happened, and I'm really glad that it's come to my attention and that people are talking about this now,
yeah.
Because that's just horrible. And if their reasoning for that is that they, you know, they don't want to lose homophobic viewers, then fuck your homophobic viewers. This is always my response to things. Like,
yeah, they weren't your real friends, you know? Do you want people like that watching your content?
Yeah,
like no.
If I had a TV show, I would happily lose 100,000 viewers of that show if it meant they were all bigoted assholes. Like, yeah. I don't want you watching my show. He says, I don't have a TV show. I don't really know how it works.
But if I did.
If I did, it would probably fail, but yeah. It would be very ethically sound.
Honestly, the thing that I've learned the most over the years is the more that I've grown up, when I was younger, because I was working in Japan, I had this like kind of image that I had to maintain. And there was like a lot of like kind of almost like rules of being an idol in Japan, which you have to conform to. And the more that I've kind of grown up and maybe dipped my toe into being a little bit more controversial, but not just that, just standing up for something that you believe in and choosing a side, it's so important. And you will lose people along the way. But you don't want them. Like, honestly, if I know that someone's a bigger in my audience, I don't want them watching me.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And you're making a stand, and you're also being a voice for people who maybe are having trouble having theirs heard. Mm-hmm. And you're representing and you're inspiring people in the next generation.
And every time somebody backs down on this, every time a TV show says, you know what, yeah, we're not gonna have LGBT plus characters because we don't want to upset those people, it's almost saying that their opinion is okay. It's almost telling those people that it's okay to feel this way and that we're listening to your feedback. It's, you know, when it should be, fuck your feedback. Your feedback is bigoted and we're not listening to it. Should be the response.
Completely.
And it is disappointing when it's not. And then even more disappointing is that they just don't have any, again, it's all just heteronormativity in the new season. And apparently that there's been like hints that there might be a gay romance this summer. But I'm like, are they just queer baiting?
Okay, I feel very strongly about
queer baiting. Queer baiting as well.
Okay, good.
You've made a video on queer baiting before, haven't you?
Yeah, I had. That was probably one of the first pieces of like LGBT
content. It was great. I remember
watching it.
Oh, I really, really liked
you.
It, yeah.
I was just, it's so ridiculous. Like, I just remember like feeling like I've been stabbed in the heart by these YouTubers who are making coming out videos, and I watched it. I was like, oh my God, I never knew that she was like queer or anything.
And then, they're not.
Straight. Oh, great. Okay, sure. I that's, honestly, it's heart-wrenching. It's ridiculous. And if this is the case, I'll be very vocal on the Twitters.
Yeah,
completely.
If we don't have a gay romance, now we've been promised one because it's pulling in LGBT plus viewers.
It's not a case of saying like, oh well, they have to like get together. It's don't hint at things unless you've got a foundation for what you're saying and you're going to come through on and fulfill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
so Love Island, do better, please. We'll be watching and we'll be very loud. Becky will tell all of her followers in Japan.
I will bang all my pots and pans together. Right in your ear. You've been warned.
I will bang my... I'm going to bring pots and pans into the studio if we don't get a gay romance on Love Island. And I'm going to make a racket to everyone listening. We're going to do some sex confessions, but I'm going to play some of the 1975. Do you like 1975?
Yes.
This is their new song. Give Yourself a Try. I love the 1975. Like, it's like they're like almost coming for my top spot of favorite band, which is Years and Years. They're never going to beat Years and Years, let's be honest. But that, like, maybe like a second best.
Good.
We love the 1975. Sex confessions. Thank you to everybody who has sent them in this week. I'm going to jump right in and read you the first one. So, I fancy my best friend. I need to know if this is just a little crush before I tell them. But how long do I wait? Oh, this is really tricky, dangerous territory. And it's a really... it's such a minefield. I'm sorry to the person who sent this in that I'm now going to tell you how awful and difficult this is. But it's such a complicated thing to try and navigate. Like... friendship and feelings, like, colliding, because there's so much that can go wrong. It can also go very, very right as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a scary one.
Can I say something?
No.
I don't know.
No, you can't.
No. Okay. No. Goodbye.
Be silent. Leave the studio.
I don't know if this is somebody struggling with a same-sex issue or not, but I think it's a really valid point within when you do fancy people of the same sex, because I think the norm that we're told in a heteronormative society is that people of the same gender of you are your friends, and people of the opposite gender are, you know, people who you could maybe date.
Yeah.
So, for example, whenever I, like, meet boys, sometimes there's an air of, like, oh, like, are we friends or could we date?
Yeah.
But when I meet, like, girls, it's so hard to, like, first of all, make it known that we're both queer. Second of all, like, you know, have that kind of air of, oh, are we becoming friends or are we becoming, like, more than that? And I think friendships can, you know, blossom into a relationship. But it's a different dynamic in a way.
Unless
the intent is set out from day one. So that's why I think for LGBT people, like, apps and things like that help make relationships a lot more accessible, because, you know, you don't end up just, like, meeting, like, girls who you kind of fancy, but you don't even know if they're, like, LGBT, let alone, you know, if you could start dating.
Yeah, it's such a confusing one. And I certainly feel that, like, as a boy, when I become, like, really, really close with other boys... Mm-hmm. And we have that friendship that, you know, so many men out there have, and we just have that regular male-on-male friendship. But because I am gay, I can't help but kind of think, wait, could there be something more here? Especially if your friends are attractive, which so many of mine
are.
Right,
exactly.
It can be a really confusing area, and I think I've got myself in situations before where I've convinced myself that I've had crushes on my friends, and then actually realize, no, you just really like them as a friend, and you've realized that they're attractive, and you've almost, like, fabricated this idea in your head.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying that is the case for this person.
Yeah.
I just think it's such a complicated thing. So the person's question was, I need to know if this is just a little crush before I tell them, but how long do I wait? I think the only person that knows the answer to that question is you. I think you will know when the right time to tell them is, but I think you need to be really, really careful when you do tell them. And you also need to kind of set your expectations to a reasonable place, because if you're going to tell them in this grandiose way and you're going to expect them to reciprocate those feelings and they don't, that's a lot of unfair pressure to put on that person.
Definitely.
Which sucks. And it does suck if you have feelings for somebody else, but you need to go into it. When you do have that conversation with them, you very much need to be ready to accept that they just want to be friends, and that
totally.
They don't reciprocate those feelings. And that can be, like, one of the hardest things in the world. But you do need to kind of go in with those expectations, because it needs to be fair for both of you.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to villainize them if they turn around and say, I don't have feelings for you, I just want to be friends. But after all, you've started out as a friendship, and that's
like priority number one, you know?
Yeah. And you don't want to lose a friend either.
Yeah, but also you don't want to, like, live a lie in a sense and be wondering, like, what could have been. So, yeah, I wish you the best of luck. But, you know, I think judging by right now, you know, this person's obviously, like, thinking about it a lot. Don't, like, invalidate your feelings. Like, you could fancy them. Like, if you're thinking about it this much, you probably do. So maybe just, you know, follow your heart. Like, what's the worst that can happen?
And I don't want to give you false hope either. But there is also the chance that they feel the same.
Yes.
And you could be missing out on something wonderful.
Exactly.
But no false hope. Don't, you know, that's a possibility, but it may also not happen.
You'll never know until you take action.
Yes.
Right?
So basically the advice Becky and I are giving you is, we don't know the answer. Sorry.
But maybe do it and maybe don't.
Maybe do, maybe don't. There's fab sitting on the fence
we
advice
really
from
are
both of
sitting
us.
High up on that fence.
But best of luck to you. We wish you all the best and I hope it works out for you. Would you like to read the next one?
Sure. So, squared up to some guy on the tube because he looked at my hairy underarms with disgust. It's 2018.
Ooh, I feel like this is probably a woman who sent this
I think
sin.
So, because I've seen a lot of boys with hairy underarms.
And nobody ever really looks at them.
No.
So we're going to presume that this is a woman who sent this in. And, all right, I'm going to be honest. Squaring up to somebody, very violent, very aggressive, and I'm not sure I agree with it. But standing your ground and being like somebody looking at you with disgust because you're presenting your natural body is absolutely unacceptable, and I'm so on your side. But also, I don't want you to get hurt, and also, I don't believe violence is ever the answer.
True. When I read this, I was like, nothing but respect for you. Like, I think this is...
I do have respect as well.
I think this is...
Saying.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, I'm a little bit in awe because I feel like when something, like, bad happens or when I, like, have a situation where someone's, like, giving me a strange look, I always just kind of, like, you know, run away, you know? And I'm really in awe that you can stand up for yourself and, you know, stand up for what you believe in, stand up for what's right. And I do that a lot online, but I think in real life I have a little bit more trouble because I'm always a bit like, you know, scared of like, what if the situation escalates? So obviously, don't be it, put yourself in danger or anything.
But stand up for yourself.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, I think that's great because you're going to have made that person think twice about what they've done.
Absolutely. Which
right?
is really, really important.
Change some minds along the way. Yeah, I am inspired.
And it's such to me, it's such a frustrating thing that this is a thing. Like I've got two female friends actually, and both of them don't shave their underarms and they don't shave their legs either. And they say they don't give a shit, which is great, but the amount of people that stare at them because of it, especially when they're on the beach or similar.
Yeah.
And it's so bizarre because that is just literally a woman's natural body. But
yeah.
Because we've got this warped beauty image body type standard thing, it's become the norm not to have that.
Yeah,
but that's
like
literally a person's natural body. That's what it looks like without you tampering with it.
Yeah, the modification is the norm. Isn't that strange?
It's
you have
the
to
most
go actively
thing.
Out of your way to look like the norm.
The norm.
Isn't it strange?
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
So, yeah, respect to you. Good for you. Just be safe.
Yes.
Always put that caveat there. I came out to my parents last week, and although they don't understand the LGBT+ community or anything queer related, they were very accepting, and I am excited for the future. Such a relief. That's not even a confession. That's just a celebratory moment. Yeah, a little round of applause for you. What I think is wonderful about that is that they've said, you know, that the parents don't necessarily understand the community. They don't understand what it means to be queer. But they're saying, you know what, we love you, we support you. And isn't that just a reaction that all parents everywhere should have?
Yes. Oh, like this fills my heart with joy. What an ending to that story, you know? I came out to my parents and ... Everything was fine and it was all great.
Even when I started reading that, when I read I came out to my parents last week, my mind instantly went to, like, this is going to be a horrible story.
Yeah.
Because it's such a shame, but, like, that's almost becoming not the accepted thing, but it's almost like what we expect now, because we hear so many horror stories of people coming out, and it's just refreshing to hear a positive story.
Oh, it's so good. It gives me so much hope, because do you know what? I think for my coming out journey, one of the hardest things was I literally don't care about what anybody thinks about me. I really care what my parents think about me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I really care, you know, if they're going to be accepting or not of me. And getting the courage to come out was so difficult. And, you know, it was a little bit turbulent, but everything's fine in the end.
Yeah.
You know, time is a healer as well. And so is, you know, time, education and knowledge. But, you know, it's sad that we gear ourselves up to hear a story like that and
assume it's going somewhere bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shout out to you.
I'm
good
very
for
happy
you.
For you. This is the beginning of you living your most authentic life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Congratulations. Today, my husband and I mutually discovered that we are both infected with pubic lice. Neither of us know why we got them. So gross. That's interesting. I feel like I should actually, as a sex educator, I feel like I should actually know the answer to this, but I don't.
Yeah.
Presumably, you can actually get pubic lice from, I think you can get it from like towels, dirty laundry, all kinds
can
of.
You?
I think you can. And I should have probably researched this in
I
advance.
I have no idea.
But I'm presumably there hasn't been any foul play here.
Yeah, I think that it would be unfair to both parties to assume that as well. I'm sure that it's something, you know, something else that we just didn't realize that could,
yeah,
you know, be caught from.
Because there are so many STIs, you know, if somebody had said, you know, today my husband and I mutually discovered that we've both got gonorrhea and we don't know why, I would be like, I'm really sorry to tell you, but your husband is cheating on you, because that would be the only explanation.
Yeah, yeah.
But with something like pubic lice, I think there are more explanations. Like, where do they come from in the first place if they're not... I don't think they're always sexually transmitted. You can get them in your eyebrows. Did you know this?
No.
You can get pubic lice in your eyebrows.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Also, thank you so much for writing into the show about this. But you should definitely check into your clinic or go see a doctor, and you can get a little cream that you just apply and it gets rid of them really, really easily. It's just that that you've said that we're both infected and not in the past tense.
Yeah.
So it seems like you still are. You can get that treated really, really easily, and it's nothing to worry about. It's also, and you said at the end, so gross, it's nothing to be ashamed of either.
You don't need to say that. I mean, just, you know, it's part of life. So just get, you know, get it sorted out and then carry on. You'll be fine.
Okay, right. Oh, no, wait. I don't think that, Becky, I thought we had time for one more, but we're actually right up to the end of the show.
Are we?
Yeah, and I was getting so carried away that I didn't even realise. It has been an absolute dream to have you on the show. I've wanted you to come on the show for so long.
Oh, that means a lot to me.
And Becky and I have known each other for such a long time, but we've only just managed to get you here, so it's lovely to
have
this little bonding
moment.
For anyone listening who wants to check out your stuff, check out your YouTube channel, follow you on social media, which they should do, all of those things, where can they do that?
You can find me online when you search Becky with two I's, B-E-C-K-I-I, on YouTube. I'm on there. I'm on Instagram, Becky Cruel, like cruel.
Like cruel, like evil.
Yeah,
she's a
evil.
Witch.
I know. Terrible. Twitter, Becky Cruel, and on Facebook, if you just search Becky Cruel, you'll find me. I look forward to catching up with you guys online.
Yay, Becky, it's been amazing to have you on the show.
I cannot thank you enough.
I'm going to play you out with, I think, one of your choices. This is a bit of Lana Del Rey.
Yes.
Cruel World.
What I had to do, 'cause you're so far past me now. Share my body and my life with you, that's way over now. There's not more I can do, you're so famous now. Got your Bible, got your gun, you like the party and have fun, and I like my candy and you're with mine. I'm finally happy now that you're gone. found another anyhow. Share my body and my mind with you. That's all over now. I did what I had to do. I could see you leaving now.